Chapter 18. Fit for Heroes. It is not knowledge that we lack. What is missing is the courage to understand what we know and draw conclusions. Asterisk Sven Lindqvist in Exterminate All the Brutes. Lloyd George famously promised a land fit for heroes for the survivors returning from World War I. That didn't happen, but the heroes from that conflict gained one historic reward: the vote. Huge numbers joined the voting rolls because almost a million died to set things up for this next round in the fight for control. Over a century after their victory, we now live in a comfort and in conditions that our grandparents and great-grandparents could only have dreamt of, and we owe them for that. However, today's free speech attacking numpties indicate that gratitude is thin on the ground in certain quarters. This is just another example of how things develop when your civilization is on the slide, as Gleb Pasha explained in The Fate of Empires. However, some of us remember sitting around rooms with our relatives, every man-jack of whom had battled for us, a whole generation of heroes smiling and communing together, men who earned a very special place in our hearts. Now, rather pathetic celebs and oddballs are the go-to heroes for many. Not for me, as I have seen real ones who risked life and limb for us, delivery men alongside posh boys who carried out their duties in our wars. More recently, I have seen young lads with their brains warped by tension, trauma, and drugs after fighting in another war we lost. I think facing shot and shell takes more out of you than facing flashing bulbs and dislikes on your social media page. Do you? When one looks at the real crises we face around the world, I think it is worth thinking about how a man of Colin's intelligence and practicality would address them. Particularly, how would he plan to develop better democracies with even more freedoms than we had before recent events saw the arrogant few toss them into the dustbin? I believe that he would see that the utopian globalists and their banking enablers are dangerous, and that we would need to counter the slide to totalitarian centralization. He might well see that under current conditions, our immediate response should be peaceful and thus hard to counter. We can develop national hybrid democracies that are truly controlled by the people through the simple device of the veto, within reach because of the votes gifted to us by our brave predecessors. These upgraded democracies will be run by all of us and not as top-down, covertly directed oligarchies. This will ensure that we can look after our interests, leaving other free and equal nations to choose their own hybrid paths as well. We should all be developing at our own chosen pace, socially and culturally, as this is undoubtedly preferable to the heedless and headlong rush to the clique's vision of nirvana. Once more, they are taking us down the well-trodden path towards a bloody denouement, with the wars, misery, and financial catastrophe we are mired in today being served up for starters. This is no different to the corpse-strewn trails down which the monarchs and representatives have always led us. And they look down their noses at us? I return the compliment. The Swiss have avoided war since 1848, and if they can do so, why not us? Why not others? They also control whether the nation should join international groups, but where is the coalition of hybrid democracies? This could be established to form a network of like-minded peoples, building the highways down which others can travel too. How the hell did nuclear war become normalized so quickly, discussed as an option, a likelihood? This is the brain trust's outcome, the result of representative democracies with parties funded by the complex which a US president warned against. This is not the outcome of a spat between hybrids. The Canadian truckers had their accounts frozen and their working futures destroyed in a representative democracy. Representative democracy is showbiz, with likability, not democratic intent, being the prime selection criteria of candidates, and many parties know that all they need do is to choose a telegenic leader to beat an opposition that is led by an empty suit lacking charisma. It's time to bring the curtain down on this glitzy sham and for us to take control. Only then can we stop more trillions from being lost and millions of lives from being wasted. Yes, you might have to go to the polls or send in your vote a few times a year, but without direct control, we will continue to cede life and death decisions to psychopathically inclined groups dominated by sick people. Men who wonder if they are gods. We have a problem, and you are the solution. In the last chapter, I focused on the ability of Michael Collins to analyze the opposition and to identify its weaknesses, and then to control the most important link in the chain, keeping his nationalist forces from victory. From this, he developed the means to grasp this vital but vulnerable link, as Lenin also taught, and applied unremitting attention and the appropriate force to it. What are the various targets a Collins would seek to annihilate, to grasp or hold today, and which of them would he focus most resources on? Let us remember that he was not aiming at an enemy on the left-to-right political spectrum, nor an opponent whose defining feature was a religion differing from that of the majority, though that was a factor. What he had to do was to focus on the small number of vulnerable intelligence assets of a foreign occupier and their limited local support network. We have a similarly small number of representatives to focus our efforts on, and they should be the peaceful targets of any campaign to wrest control from their few backers, the real power merchants, and to place it into the hands of us, the many. Today, when it comes to policies, the parties in our representative democracies have markedly reduced the range of policy options to choose from. They have tended to coalesce around settled norms, not only presenting fewer alternatives to voters, but demonizing many that were mainstream until very recently. They now must conform to the internationalist central banker's vision of planet protection through depopulation. Today, it is the territory of the mind that is under assault and apparently being taken, achieved by exterminating and cleansing the wrong thoughts of the mass of US brutes. The problem for the WEF agenda setters and Bernays corrupt manipulators is that they lack the numbers. They are also growing in awareness that their time might be up, hence their panic and the overdrive in messaging and the rapid revision of their scenario narratives. What happens if we find leaders and coherence come together and turn the tables? We are many and have more than enough brain power individually and collectively to have seen through their scams, so the fight is on. Yes, we have been shorn of some freedoms earned in the past to protect us, but we are not done yet, with the vote as our most effective weapon. For now. For decades, I have studied and experienced the alternatives to the hybrid, but it remains the best long-term, workable and acceptable solution to our ills that I have found. Tested and proven, it meets the criteria of a theory verified in practice against the communist experiment in dictatorship that has piled misery atop misery. Our fake representatives may have failed less obviously, but when compared to the part-timers paid a pittance in the Swiss hybrid, their shortcomings are very clear. Imperialism was supported by the tiny group of the elect who called for invasions to spread the progress envisioned by this wonderful eugenics-inclined elite, suborning representatives and parties with status, favors, and promises. Hence, Michael's iron law of oligarchy and the huge income gaps between the few haves and the many have-nots, growing ever wider under their self-interested governance. When the democratic alternative is understood, when the hybrid solution is offered to the electorate, I guarantee that great change is only one vote away. I'm staking my future and my neck on it. The US today is the prime example of the covert takeover of democracy by an oligarchy subtly directing a group of largely conniving and connected cowards Democrat and Republican in name only. Cash is king to them, not the people, as the defense and intelligence agencies soak up huge portions of the money borrowed from the future or taxed and paid for in the now by all Americans. But take them on, and you will pay. Hollywood does its bit with the PR. The trial lawyers do theirs for the Democrats, because more legislation means more litigation, and the Republicans backed more big spending when Trump was in office too. The parties are scamsters, and we must control them, or it's all over. The reality is that the bankers and the foundations run the U.S. and its expansionist policy, sorry, global righteous policeman's role, apparently, and if the parties won't hold them to account, then the people must. This is why you and I need an effective means to control them, and that is the people's veto, the trusted wand of the Swiss magicians. History is not something that just happens. It is a result of what we do. And if enough of us step forward and volunteer to implement the hybrid democracy we need, we can create it. Never sit on your hands and give up. Never lose sight of your objective, as it is the result that counts. Forget the taking part stuff in this affair. This is not a game. Researching, campaigning, and voting for the hybrid democracy is all it is going to take. The vote was earned for us by the blood spilled fighting totalitarians. Now we can take down the wannabe totalitarian globalists in our midst by voting to do so. They want to leapfrog the development of a solid base on which a decent future for all can rest, simply ignoring the consent of the governed. Well, I think you will agree with me that consent counts, and those who wish to impose their agenda without it are dictators. That's clear enough. The elite's most vulnerable point is that they must appear to be democratically inclined. They are not, but they must appear to be. Hence, why voting for hybrid-supporting community-minded people and parties is vital. Once the campaign demonstrates its utility in one state, publics all over the world will call for the adoption of the system, demanding the hybrid and nothing but the hybrid. Once we have it, the system can be fashioned ever more closely over time to suit the wishes of the many, with the only losers being the con artists who have scammed us for decades, centuries, and millennia. This might seem too simple, but keeping it simple stupid means a lot less can go wrong. Get the people's veto in place, and the rest naturally follows. It doesn't take a huge constitutional change, just the will of the many to control the mendacious planning of a few. The army gave us great advice about obstacles that are in front of our lines and protect us from the enemy. Whether the obstacles were natural or man-made, they are useless if they are not covered by fire. In other words, you cannot just allow politicians to pass laws if we don't have a chance to stop or alter them before they are imposed. We must have the final say, otherwise the political class will continue to sail on and ignore our wishes as it has for centuries. I used to feel sorry for those behind the Iron Curtain, held there without freedom, but today our own political class is under orders to control us, our thoughts, and our expressions, just as the poor Soviets were and the Chinese still are. It's time to take them on, and the hybrid system will allow you to do that. The Nazis were famous for the big lie, and all propagandists have seen the effectiveness of Goebbels and his dangerous maxim. In this volume, I have done what I can to forewarn you of what my lifetime of research and bruised elbows has taught me. In November 1938, Louis Golding published The Jewish Problem, just a year before Hitler began the war, but as often forgotten, still some years after his murderous campaigns against the Jews, the communists, and other unfortunates had begun. Golding and Europe had already seen the genocide underway during these years of peace, and he concluded his sad book with the chapter, The Future, in which he had this to say: "If Hitler must come again, I would rather there were no Jews for him to come back to." I would recall the pulped flesh of Jewish prisoners in concentration camps, the small, wincing children isolated like lepers in the schools, the dispossessed lawyers and teachers shuffling from gutter to gutter, more tragic in the cold, slow certainty of their doom than the spectacular victims of pogrom. But I am Tennysonian enough to believe that despite these cyclical relapses into savagery, each time we do not relapse so far as before. I sometimes believe that, as between Attila and Hitler, there are a few points in Heiter's favour. I console myself that when the next Hitler comes, he will be a little gentler than this one. How heartrending was that? A little gentler. Hitler was not so gentle in the end, was he? One of the most thought-provoking works that I have read on this theme is The Ghetto Fights by Marek Edelman. He was the only survivor of the leadership group that fought the Nazis when the Warsaw ghetto occupants fought back. Tragically, hundreds of thousands had already been transported and gassed by the time the Jews fought. And what did Edelman and the fighters do before turning their guns on the Nazis? First, they dealt with the collaborators within. Then they turned to face the enemy without. Reading that book in 2015 made me think even more deeply on where we were heading. I then read John Laffin's Hitler Warned Us and saw how blind representative democracies were to the rise of a horrendous threat in our midst from one of the leading cultures in our civilization. It wasn't only the Germans with a collective failing. We suffered from it too. Our collective failing was a paralytic passivity in the face of supercharged and evil aggression. As they say, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Unfortunately, as a species, we are not as smart or as well-informed and wise as we like to think we are. I realized that I had to work out how I could push for action early enough to avoid another crisis, and then another, and then the disaster. It is as if we are in Trotsky's world now, one of permanent revolution, perpetual crises manufactured to control us through division, distraction, and disinformation. There is an answer if you take heed, but you will need to take courage in order to take control. I am not alone in looking at issues strategically. A fellow ex-intelligence officer, Bernard Lewis, the go-to expert on Islam on US TV shows after 9/11, explained in The Jews of Islam the strategic type of thinking that goes on and which we are up against. Lewis quoted from a famous letter allegedly penned by the far-sighted and thoughtful Caliph Umar I. The Muslims of our day will eat from the work of these people, subjugated non-Muslims, as long as they live. And when we and they die, our sons will eat from their sons forever, as long as they remain. For they are slaves to the people of the religion of Islam, as long as the religion of Islam shall prevail. This policy worked from the Arab invasions after 632 until well into the 20th century in places such as the Yemen, and was imposed on the subject non-Muslim peoples they had conquered and subjugated, dhimmis, living under a protection pact, a dhimma as second-class peoples under Islamic rule. Those people responsible for its imposition and maintenance were a highly successful jurist elite, and after nearly 1,400 years still control the laws for over a billion Muslims. They are not the only people to have thought like this. Many have proven to be happy to behave in a similar fashion against their own, let alone those of a different religion, culture, or civilization.